Hello and welcome to this live stream of the Albion Obsessed podcast. On Saturday evening, we said we would see you on the other side. Welcome to the other side. Yesterday was a historic day in the day of our football club. But before we get on to that, let's see who we got on the show today. Joe, how you feeling? You feeling okay? You Monday been treating you all right?
This has been the best Monday of my life. And will be the best Monday of my life that I will ever know. And until we win the Europa League, of course. But I feel on top of the world, mate. I've been on an Aston Villa podcast this morning, Talk of the Trinity. So big shout out to them for having me on. And it was the first time I was talking, you know, sort of on a podcast about it. And I just had chills the whole time. As you can imagine, feeling very good. How are you?
I don't know why you're feeling so good, Joe. I mean, surely we've bottled Europe, haven't we? It's all over. It's done. I joke, of course. We'll get onto the feelings, and we welcome Dagan. We're going to put Dagan in the show. Dagan is in the show. Dagan, we're just going through the intro, so you haven't missed anything too important. Curtis, how you doing?
Very good. Yeah, much like Joe, this is a wonderful Monday. A wonderful, wonderful Monday. But I'm feeling good and positive, and other good words for positive.
Other synonyms. Very, very good. I like that. Very nice. Dagan, thank you for joining us. Dagan, how are you feeling on this Monday?
I think I'm starting out the same way I did last time. Fandarntastic. Just leave it there.
That's like the most wholesome word. Fantastic. I love that.
We love our American content creator friends. We also welcome Sony. Sony, thank you very much for joining us on your afternoon. It's weird saying that because it's the evening here. Sony, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm tired. Hello, greetings from a good old sunny Washington, D.C., where it's like 80-something degrees right now out here. I drank about 7 or 8 mimosas yesterday after the game in celebration, and I came to work pretty plastered for a work party. And the first person that looked at me was like, "You're fucked up, dude. You're messed up." I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine. It's whatever, dude. I'm celebrating." So I feel great.
I love that. I love that. Aram, welcome to the podcast. How you doing, my brother?
Yeah, very well. Thank you, Tomek. Very well. Emotionally drained. Still, but yeah, good, mate.
So. Aram, I'm going to come to you for my first question of the pod. Aram, take yourself back to the early 2000s. You sat at the Weird Dean. Did you ever think that what we have achieved would even remotely be possible?
Probably not, no. I think when that final whistle went yesterday afternoon, a lot of emotion came out. Even talking about it now, it's the first real time I've spoken about it really since it happened, and I can just feel myself getting choked up even thinking about it. You know, the journey, you know, as a club we've been on, and the journey I've been on with the club. Even the thought about Premier League was seemed a million miles away. So I never thought of Europe. Never crossed my mind ever. It never has done. If you're telling me when I'm sitting on my arse in freezing cold, -4 degrees, watching Brighton Wimbledon, getting cold, just getting frozen solid, and we end up 24 years later, potentially playing into Europa League football, it's beyond words, really. It generally is, and it's been so hard to put it into words, really. If I'm honest, I just couldn't help but cry yesterday. It's literally, I just couldn't really fathom it. To be honest, generally couldn't, and the more I think about it, like, just looking, just standing around staring at everybody yesterday, going absolutely nuts. And there's just me just in tears in my work stuff, looking like an absolute wally in my bloody suit and waistcoat. But I was just, yeah, just in absolute bits. And I don't think it's sunk in yet, to be honest. Like, it feels very, very surreal. And the fact is that I've seen 4 relegations, 5 promotions, and I've seen us in the Premier League beat teams like Arsenal, beat teams like United, beat teams like City, Chelsea, Liverpool, etc. The list goes on and on. And now we're going up against Europe's greatest teams in a fantastic competition. Mind-boggling, Tom. Just generally mind-boggling. And we walked out the ground yesterday, me and my dad, and he just looked at me and said, I never thought I'd witness this in my lifetime. And if I'm honest, neither did I. I can't lie. And he just said, you know, my dad would be looking down right now, and he just looked at the sky and he said, you know, look what we're doing. And yeah, it was very, very touching moment. Very touching moment.
Yeah, it's and that comment just before from Sam, just going to put up on screen here, including those no longer here. So those who, as you've said, Aaron, those people that are no longer with us in body, but certainly with us in spirit, and I'm sure they were looking down yesterday. Sorry. If you do not like men getting emotional, this is the wrong podcast for you, because it hit home last night for me as well. It's very similar.
Today is about feeling all the feels, okay? Like, there is no shame in feeling emotional. As someone whose team also won a crazy huge championship, it's not Europa League, it's the World Series, but still. I saw a lot of people be really emotional. Like, I was emotional. I cried as soon as I got the text message, hey, we won. Like, the entire city was crying. There were people, like, screaming and shouting and everything. So, like, do what you got to do today. It is A-okay to be emotional, because this is a very important time in your history, and you guys deserve the celebration.
Damn right. And there will be no shame on this podcast. But if you, the viewers, can't handle it, well, maybe this is not the place for you. But no, seriously, it's and the more, every time, it's similar to you, Aaron, every time I think about it, I just it just hits again. You get that lump in your throat. And it didn't hit until I was going to bed. And I think it was you, Joe, it was your fault, because I went on your Twitter and you had posted that trailer from that film we've been waiting bloody forever to see.
2 years old.
Yeah. And I watched that back, and you see the goals at that Doncaster game. You see the goals at the Hereford game. You see the fans marching. You see the with Dean. You see the first game of the Amex. You see after the Shore of Mare disaster. And you see those things, and you see what the club have been through. And then you think of yesterday's achievement, and you just think how incredible the last 26 years have been. And it happened 40 years to the day since that FA Cup semi-final in 1983. A very poetic moment, Joe, in our club's history, don't you think?
It's the greatest moment for a very, very long time. I saw, in classic Brighton fashion, people arguing over what moment was better, Doncaster, Hereford, or yesterday. You know, take everything, because every single moment that's led us here has been the best moment. The best moment for me is supporting this football club. The best moment for me is wearing that badge on my chest and roaring those boys on to success every single week. Week in, week out, being there, rain or shine, being there, loss, draw, win. And to get this achievement with 2 games remaining, we still got to play Man City and Villa. You know, we can put our feet up. We can enjoy 2 games of Premier League football and get ready for what's going to be such an incredible few months and you know, leading up to the season, we got to go see those guys in the US, which is going to be extra special for them, and to see the team in the flesh. I know you have Sony, and I'm so excited for you, Dagan, to see the boys in the flesh for the first time. And you know, that's an extra special thing, is having these guys on board with us, enjoying every moment, just as we would, just as we have. So I'm just incredibly proud and very, very excited for what's to come.
Yeah, it's just the start of this journey. Well, I say the start, you know what I mean? It's the beginning of this journey. So let's break it down then. Let's break down the fantastic scenes yesterday. Now, I'm going to come to you on this one first, Dagan, because it's no secret, obviously, that we just came off the back of of what on paper at least looks like a heavy defeat. And you just posted on the group chat not long before of the podcast here started that under Roberto De Zerbi, our last eight Premier League losses were all followed by a win in the following Premier League match, dating all the way back to October. So were you confident that the pattern would continue and that mentality of being able to bounce back after a setback would continue?
Absolutely. not yet knowing that stat, but knowing the general trend, I was really confident going into yesterday. And as we sat and talked, and most recently, all the worry about, you know, Brighton's going to Brighton. I wasn't willing to believe it. And Aaron, I have to confess, there was a moment in the group chat between when that goal went in and you were waving the "I told you so" banner.
I've seen this script so many times. 2-0 is a dangerous scoreline.
When it was about to be 2-2, I was, before they started checking, I was typing out, "Aaron, I think I hate you a little bit."
That's what years of experience has told me, is that 2-0 is always a dangerous scoreline, doesn't matter who you're playing against.
Yeah,
when I saw Walcott steam through on goal and it went in, I just I sort of stood there like, oh, crap.
I was very unwilling to have my ceaseless optimism be given a blow like that. But I'm just, you know, I'm glad that the toenail was offsides and we got that third from Gross. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But amen. No, I was really confident. I mean, looking at the numbers, looking at what De Zerbi's mentality has been and what the team's mentality has been under him, I had every confidence would get this Europe securing win. But just gotta love that he's not willing to concede that we really have it until we really have it.
Yeah, and that mentality is fantastic, and we'll talk more about that toenail a bit later. Now, Curtis, you were at the game yesterday. What was the atmosphere like in that first opening minutes? Because I'm sure, although it was very jubilant and buoyant, because obviously we knew what we could achieve, the videos coming from the ground beforehand were fantastic with the marching band and everything. It looked phenomenal. It looked like a fantastic family day out. But what was the mood in the ground? Was there a sense of not only joy, but a sense of nerves as Brighton, you know, were going through those early stages?
I think it was more of an understanding of what could happen if it goes our way. Not so much the game. I just felt everyone was waiting for this amazing thing to potentially happen. And as you know, as we were talking about, you know, at moments when we first scored, it was like amazing. Oh my God. And then two came, and then it became 2-2, and you could just see all the air leave everyone simultaneously. We were like, oh, it's gonna be one of these, it's gonna be one of these things again. And then you could just feel the belief growing and growing and growing and growing. And then the third goal happened, which we will talk. I know we'll talk about all of this, but it was weird. It was weird because there was confidence. I could feel the confidence, and it was like a slow build. But the crowd were amazing. They were so loud, non-stop. It was fantastic yesterday. Really great.
Fantastic. And Sony, what was it like for you supporting stateside? How did you, you know, view the game, as it were?
I was actually really confident going in. Like, I had no doubt in my mind we were going to win yesterday. Like, everybody was freaking out, panicking. I'm sitting over here on my couch with my dog just going, yeah, it should be fine. It'll be okay. Like, everything will be fine. I was posting out memes throughout the game, just, like, as Ferguson was scoring and as Gross was scoring. And, you know, like, Mitoma's, like, near shots. I'm just out here posting memes and trying to get the mood up and whatnot. And I feel like that definitely helped. The DC, like, stateside Seagulls were all in a group chat, just, like, freaking out in excitement and adventure. It was just a lot of fun, and the fact that I was able to enjoy it on my day off was awesome. So it definitely one of those things. And of course, as I'm walking down the street, people are going to be like, oh, what's this? Like, what team are you repping? I'm like, oh, this is Brighton Hope Albion. I'm celebrating today because we won. And everyone's like, oh, that's so cool. Congratulations. That was basically the theme at work. They're just like, oh, I see your soccer team won. I'm like, hell yeah, brother. Of course it did. So, it was definitely fun. I, again, no doubt in my mind, you were going to win yesterday. I saw the 2-2 and freaked out. I was like, oh God, this is it. We got to get like an insurance goal in there somehow. And then once VAR basically disregarded it, it was 2-1. I was like, okay, we have a chance. We just need one more insurance goal and we're fine. So I'm just really happy that it panned out the way that I thought it was going to pan out.
Well, I'm glad it certainly did. I mean, let's dive into it then. I'm not going to go through the game blow by blow like we would normally do. Let's talk about the big moments then, guys. Let's talk about the big moments. It was a fairly open start to the game, I felt. Like, you know, Mitoma had a couple of chances there, hit the post with one of them, skewed a shot wide. Aaron, as the resident, I wouldn't say pessimist, but the resident realist, were you just feeling yeah, man, it's going to be one of those days? What was your sort of like early sort of view on the game? Did you feel like it was going to be a tight one, or did you feel like they were there for the taking?
It's a weird one, really. I felt when Alcaraz had his chance, I was thinking, okay, they're not fully out of this. They're actually showing a bit of attacking intent, and then that was really about it. And then we just sort of took over from that point. And I shouldn't say this, because I never normally say things like this, but I did feel quite confident going into it. As soon as we kicked off, I just felt confident. And I don't know why I felt confident. Last time I felt confident was Burnley last year, and look what happened there. I was even confident on Monday when we got battered by Everton, so that was also fun. So I haven't got a particularly good track record, you could say. But Southampton just didn't really worry me, to be honest. Like, I just thought, even if they shove 10 men behind the ball, they're just not going to defend it well, because they can't. They haven't got the players for that. So I was confident. I think everyone could sense. Admittedly, when we went back to 2-1, you felt the nerves. The nerves were there in that ground. You could literally cut the tension with a knife. Like, it was horrendous. And then obviously after the VAR offside, and then it really changed. The atmosphere sort of changed from that point, really. Like, everyone started to not believe again, because I don't think the belief went, but everyone just said, you know, that's going to be their only attack now, because De Zerbi's not going to let them do that again. And they didn't. And it was perfect game plan, really.
Fair is fair. Joe, let's talk about the man. Well, one of them, I would say the man, because that's not fair. One of the men of the moment, and that is young Evan Ferguson. I mean, what a revelation he has been this season. And when you need someone to step up to the plate, you need that striker. Evan Ferguson delivers. That first goal, Joe, almost came out of nothing, really. McAllister lays it off to Ferguson on the edge of the box, and he takes a touch and he just lumps it really straight under McCarthy. McCarthy should have done better. There's no doubt about that. But when that goal went in, Joe, what was your immediate reaction physically and emotionally?
Yeah. So in the lead up to the goal, everyone was saying, you know, we're again trying to create the perfect goal. We're trying to pass the ball into the net. And, you know, we just need to take a shot. and that's what Evan Ferguson did. You know, just as you say, Tom, lumps it towards McCarthy. I think the power of the shot maybe surprised McCarthy there. And it literally on the replay looks like it just goes straight through him. And you've got to give credit to Evan Ferguson there for being able to finish so emphatically like that. You know, under it was under pressure because it's the goal to open the floodgates. It was coming, as you say, with the Matoma chances. I could see that they were 100% there for the taking. You know, they've not got relegated for no reason. They've got plenty of holes to exploit, and Evan Ferguson was there to finish it off when we needed it the most. And seeing that ball bulge in the back of the net from the north stand, who's in the south stand goal, was just it happened so fast, didn't it, Curtis and Aaron? Like it. Suddenly the ball is in the back of the net, everyone's celebrating, and the celebrations from there could start, because I felt like as soon as that first goal went in, everyone started to relax a little bit more, and then the second came, and you know it was just after that and until Southampton got that lucky corner into the back post, it was relative cruise control, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, with the quality of the side, and as up against a already relegated opposition, it was either going to be one of those where it was a walk in the park, or they had something to show, something to play for, in the sense of maybe a shop window sort of effect. Look at me, come and get me, which was my worry before the game. But Curtis, I mean, we've talked about Matoma just there. We've talked about him missing a few opportunities, you know, close on. But let's talk about that assist then for goal numero dos.
But we've got to talk about the fact that he nearly scored one himself, came off the post before even Ferguson scored a goal. Because I remember being in the north and we all were like, yeah! And it was like, oh, no. But even still, no, that assist was spicy. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. He's such a fantastic player. He has struggled, you know, later on in this season, I think. I think because he is such an active player, he's probably quite tired, I imagine, you know. Can get quite exhausting, I imagine, running that much. But I thought he was fantastic yesterday. Don't have a bad word to say about him. He was able to get around his man, and he nutmegged someone yesterday. That was funny to watch. But yeah, just that assist, stunning, stunning.
Yeah, and it was inch perfect, Dagan, wasn't it? Inch perfect to Evan Ferguson. I mean, not only would I like your thoughts on the goal, Dagan, but how's this for a lovely stat? 19 goals scored by teenagers in the Premier League this season, and Brighton account for more than half of that number. I mean, what a staggering statistic. So my question to you, Dagan, is twofold. First of all, what did you think of Evan Ferguson's second goal? And the second part is, with Brighton's willingness to give those teenagers a chance, and especially with European football now, obviously, we'll be competing in the FA Cup as well and the Carabao Cup. Does that make Brighton a more interesting opportunity for young players?
I think it does, and I think it's apparent, right? Anybody who can look at those numbers can see what kind of opportunity is offered to teenagers. There are certainly other talented young players throughout the league that are not getting those kinds of opportunities, even at clubs well below us in the table that won't offer European football in the near future. That'll be interesting to see how we balance that going forward when we, you know, have more important games. But with the strength of the squad, we also, you know, may have even more moments where we can infuse some of the younger guys, feeling that they're surrounded by such strength, even in the other positions of depth, that we'll be able to do that. The thing that's striking to me about Ferguson, he just has a nose for finishing. It reminds me of, I hate to say it because I loathe him, but he reminds me a lot of Kane in his just sort of aptitude for putting his body in the right place at the right time. And he's clearly fearless. He is unafraid. We've said this from the very beginning of the season. He's unafraid to shoot. And there were probably a half dozen opportunities, at least as good as the one he took and scored the initial goal on. The shot wasn't taken. Part of me thinks he benefits from only knowing this version of Brighton, the Tony Bloom version of Brighton. His life isn't much longer than Tony Bloom's tenure and Brighton's rise. So he only knows of Brighton getting better and better and better and better every year. And here he is to take us to, you know, potentially the top. A future where he's the leading goal scorer in the Premier League is not one that sounds that far-fetched. Certainly not among the top two or three. So I love Evan Ferguson from the first moment. I got a look at him. I said, he needs to be in the first team and he needs to be our starting striker. And I'm so glad that De Zerbi had the faith in him to put him in that spot. Just brilliant.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that we probably wouldn't have seen if previous managers had been at the club. But no, I mean, that's just a massive kudos. I mean, we've been saying for years that we need more strength and depth at the striker positions, Aaron. But here he comes, Evan Ferguson. And what a season this young man has had. And to get a brace yesterday and with all that pressure must be a fantastic feeling for the lad, but also fantastic for Roberto De Zerbi to show that, you know, the faith that he put in him has been rewarded.
Yeah, that's what you want if you're a youngster, is to have a manager who believes in you. You know, and he's given him the opportunity to prove himself on the big stage, and he's done it. I don't think there's been a time where he's come on or, you know, started and he hasn't let us down. I don't believe there is. Do we still need to strengthen that position? Yes. Yeah, 100%. That's my view. And I expect that's probably one of the positions we will look at in the summer as a striker anyway, because we can't rely on a 19-year-old to bag 20 goals, 25 goals a season. We can't rely on Welbeck or Undav to do the same. We still need an actual goal scorer. But he hasn't... I think the best goal out of the two yesterday was the second one for me. I think the second one, the finish is just oozes quality. It's calm, composure. And it was the perfect finish, the perfect ball, and it was a perfect finish. And like one of the comments said earlier, it does sort of let Matoma off a little bit after missing two absolute sitters as well, because he should have had two. We should have been 2-0 up very early on. But we weren't, and luckily Ferguson was there. The first goal, like Joe said, it was a good finish, but 9 times out of 10, the keeper saves that. Because he's an awful bit of goalkeeping. And even when we, from the north stand, we could tell how bad a bit of goalkeeping that was. And can't take anything away from him. He takes a touch, he gets a little bit of space and he strikes it. And that's instinct as a striker. You want to get that yard of space to hit it. And that's, you create your own luck as a striker. You create your own luck. You know, nothing will ever fall for you. You make it fall for you. You be in the right positions. You be tactically smart and savvy, like Dagan said, like Kane. You know, I'm not Kane's biggest fan, but he does, he plays the striker role perfectly. He knows where to be at the right play, right time. He gets goals for fun. He's got 30 goals, was it 25 goals for last like 4 or 5 seasons, something stupid like that? He says a lot. I mean, Haaland is a prime example. He is the Irish Haaland. He has the build of an old-fashioned number 9, but he's got the ability and the brains of a modern-day striker. And it could generally be the perfect combination. And I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up his ass, but it could be the perfect... He could be, quite easily, he would be our Premier League top goal scorer. Like, in my opinion, if he doesn't want to leave, he doesn't want to go anywhere else for the next 5 years or so, there's absolutely no reason why he can't break that 26 goals. There's absolutely no reason why.
Yeah, fair. I mean, he scored how many now? 5? Is it 5 this season? 5? 6? So, stick around, Evan. Stick around because it could be you. But no, he does feel like that player that we've been missing. Now, Sony, I mean, in the last live stream, Dagan called us sad sacks. Yeah, that is what happened. because there we were being like, oh, we might not win. Oh, and Dagan's like, nah, we got this. But as Aaron has already alluded to, Brighton don't do things easily. We like to make things harder for ourselves because, you know, why not? Why not add a bit of drama to the proceedings? So the second half starts and Southampton claw a goal back from a corner. Us Brits, as Dagan has said, as sad sacks, it would have been, I suppose, our reaction would have probably been a heart-in-mouth, heart-sinking reaction. But as our resident optimists from across the pond, what did you make of sort of like the Southampton goal that sort of almost ruined the party?
I saw the meltdown on Twitter instantaneously, and I just kind of laughed and was like, guys, it's not that bad. I promise it's not that bad. Now, I say this, you know, I think it's because I've gone through like so much sports trauma in the last couple of years to where I'm so blunted by it by now. But I'm like, it's still, yeah, it's second half. Sure, you scored. Cool. But like, you can make it up. It's not the end of the world. Like, you know, yeah, we have two other games behind it too. We could totally make it up there too. We may as well just wrap it up today. Cause I mean, it was the easiest game to wrap it up with. The other two would have been like crazy, crazy challenges. But I mean, I had utmost faith. Like, a lot of people tend to discredit a lot of the players sometimes if they're not doing well. They're just like, oh, they're doing bad, they suck, like this, that, and the other thing. And I just kind of look at it from a sense where it's like, there's a plan to everything. And when the Newcastle game was happening, I was like, there's a plan to everything. So maybe there's like a back plan. Maybe they need to do this and that and the other thing. And then when the roster came out yesterday and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect roster, I'm like, see, I knew he had a plan the whole time. So
oh, I think we've lost Sony. But just picking up on that point, yeah, you're right. It was, oh, we'll be back.
What the goals are. Oh no, did my headphones die? You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, and we can hear you. You did clock out for a bit. You were just talking about like the starting 11. I mean, and you're right, it's like that plan. And it was really nice to see that starting 11 back. Joel Veltman coming back into the side, you know, it felt massive, felt huge after having to play Caicedo at right back. So you're right, Sony. I think there was a clear plan from De Zerbi there.
We just have to trust the process. Yeah. I think a lot of people are super skittish when we deviate from like the initial plan, or if something new happens, we all start freaking out because you're like, no, this isn't what's supposed to happen. This is what we're used to. So it's nice to see the variation. It's nice to see the differences. It's nice to basically see everything like change up. And I think that's what we should all kind of embrace, is like, embrace the chaos, embrace the change, because there's a plan behind everything. And I trust RDZ way too much for him to like not do his due diligence.
Yeah, very well put, very well put. I mean, shame that it came from a corner, I feel, because corners have been one of our weak points this season. So I think that definitely needs looking at moving forward. Again, it wouldn't be Brian without a bit of drama. It did look like Walcott had caught Brighton napping as they hit on the counter, very similar to Everton, and he did tuck it under Steele. Joe, what was that wait whilst you were waiting for that VAR decision? What was that like? Because it was horrible at home, but what was that like for you in the ground?
My initial thoughts were, here we go. There it goes. We've blown it. Now we've got to play City and Villa and try and do it against them. And all of the catastrophic thoughts were going through my head. And then I saw that massive, beautiful purple screen appear, which has not been beautiful at all this season, I will add. And my initial thoughts when the VAR came up was to get into the group chat, because you guys watching on TV have more of an idea as to what's going on. Because again, the fans in the stadium are left in the dark. What are they checking? How far is it off? Until obviously they come to the decision and show the final decision. And when that final decision came up, that's when I got angry. So when the goal went in, I was in despair. I was head in hands, head in scarf, almost in tears that we're going to blow this to Southampton. And then I got angry when the goal was disallowed, because I know these players are better than that. I know that these players can close a game out better than what we were looking like we were going to do. And that was the wake-up call. You know, I think we had a few wake-up calls. Sorry, my voice is going, if you can hear that. I think we had a few wake-up calls throughout the game. The Alcaraz chance in the first half was definitely a wake-up call. As you say, Tom, we sort of started to control the game after that. And you could hear the roar as soon as that goal was disallowed. And it was everyone just saying, get a third, as Sony mentioned. It's the insurance goal. We need that insurance goal. And thank God for Pascal Gross.
Yeah, it was the VAR thing was really frustrating because BBC Sussex put out their commentary highlights, yesterday evening, and Warren said, as it happened, he's offside. So if Warren can see that, obviously from where he sat, Warren Aspinall is magic, Joe. That's how. But Warren Aspinall said, yeah, he's definitely offside. So my question would be like, well, if Warren can see that from the off, why does it take VAR so long?
Tom, it was so tight.
Yeah,
the thing is, so tight.
But you've got to remember, there is a slight angle on the thing. It's not like looking at it.
No, of course not.
Perpendicular. It's not like a right angle. You're looking at it when you see it on things. 100%, Aaron. I agree because on the replays, it looks like on the replays we got away with one. And again, I'm just saying this from the point of view of Warren Aspinall. He was adamant that it was offside. So again, I mean, I don't know if it's angles or what it is, but no, that was the view from Warren Aspinall, BBC Radio Sussex, alongside Johnny Cantor. But no, it was tight, and you're right, Joe. When that went in, it was that moment of, oh Christ, here we go. But thankfully, VAR did us a favour or didn't do us a favour. I don't know. I'm just glad that it got called off. But as you say, Joe, that Pascal Gross strike that sees him level on points with Glenn Murray and Neil Mopay sealed the deal. And Curtis, it couldn't have happened to a better person than Pascal Gross, the man who scored our first Premier League goal, the man who has been through so much with this football club that many consider to be a club legend. What do you think, Curtis, that Pascal Gross goal?
I feel bad. I feel like Dagan wanted to say something before.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dagan. I didn't see you. By all means, chip in.
I was just going to say the call here was like starkly juxtaposed with the call that you just described, because the call here was that, you know, the official reviewing was the only person in the building that thought it was offside, except maybe Lewis Dunk, because Dunk did raise his hand in the air fairly late, mind you, encouraging the offside. But it didn't sound like there were cries of offside in the way that there often are from the crowd. It was deathly silent. Like on television, it sounded deathly silent here, as though the wind had completely gone out of the place. And, you know, the commentators here just thought like, oh, is it possible that it was offside? Like that they gave no hint. So Aspinall was clearly on it. And it must've had a great look, maybe where he was stationed, was looking right across it.
Or maybe it was just the blue tints in his glasses. I don't know.
We were bound to get one of the close ones eventually, right? We were bound to.
It's the refs doing us a favor after they ballsed up against Spurs. By the way, thank you, Spurs, for bottling against Brentford. Thank you very much. Just Curtis, back to that Pascal Gross then. What a guy. And the player that I suppose I wanted to score after Lewis Dunk would have been Pascal, I suppose, just because, as I say, he's been on this Premier League journey with us, and he scored the first goals of our Premier League era. And it's just so fitting that it was his goal that secured European football. The Kaiser has done very well.
Poetry, true poetry. And to see his celebrations on the clip that was posted up on social media, just him screaming and, oh, amazing. You know, it was so weird. Like, after everything yesterday, I wasn't crying, right? As I say, I was just in shock. And it was the moment of the lap of honour where they interviewed him and he said, "This is the best day in my football career." And that was what got me at that very moment. I was like, Again, it's that whole thing that we forget these people are human beings and sometimes, and they're not just these football playing robots. And, you know, they want to achieve these things as well, as much as we want to see it. So I'm just so happy for them. And people like Pascal Gross, who richly, richly deserves it, who's such a great servant of the club, who is a consummate professional, who comes out and gives interviews after the bad times and is brutally honest and willing to say when we're not good enough. And, you know, he's been on quite the ride since he's been with us. And I'm really, really happy for him and everybody else.
I mean, let's not forget, this is a man that, what, 18 months ago wasn't in our squad. Many fans had written off, I mean, including myself. You know, I'm going to hold my hands up and say, you know, when you had the likes of Bissouma, you know, in the squad at the time, you know, you thought, well, is there a place for Pascal Gross? He's not quick enough to play potter ball. But yet, you know, Roberto De Zerbi, you know, has been very outspoken about how Pascal Gross is such an intelligent footballer and such an incredible footballer. And, you know, it's just so, again, so fitting that he scored the goal. I mean, obviously, Southampton scored one, so you could argue it was Ferguson's second that secured Europe. But the reality is that it was that Pascal Gross goal that put it to bed, you know, put the score to bed. And it was a really nicely well-taken goal. I mean, the corner, it fell to him. He had a touch, dragged the defender, created space for himself and just rifled in. And, I mean, Dagan, with the scoreline at 3-1, as you're already an optimist, so you probably believed already. But for you, was that enough? Was that, you just like, yep, it's done?
I thought it was done for sure. I thought we'd score more. I really did. I thought, and the way the game opened up after that, it looked as though we would. We were almost overly unselfish after that. But what I'll say about Gross and this goal, I thought was emblematic of this. It's like he stops time. Like, he slows everyone else down to his speed and just will go through a series of, you know, those little fakes. And he makes the same little moves, but he's patient and deliberate, and he takes exactly what space he's given. There was an impossibly small window that he put that ball through, both through all of the players that were there, the defender immediately in front of him, and to squeeze it in, you know, just inside the post. It was a remarkable goal, because I didn't feel like it was struck that hard. It was just perfect. Which it was in my mind, the most Pascal Gross goal possible. It's just a treat, treat.
He's one of those players that reminds me very much of Adam Lallana. He doesn't have the pace or the agility of someone like a Matoma, but he is just so good with the ball at his feet. Once again, people are talking about bloody VAR. It's such a shame. I do miss the celebration agony of a goal now. A second nature to wait for VAR. Great win, mind you. No, yeah, you're 100%, Jason. VAR has robbed us of a lot of joy over the past few seasons, but definitely certainly helped us out a bit yesterday. So the game ended with the whistle going and the score being 3-1. 3 points that, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound absolutely bonkers, that ensures that Brighton and Hove Albion will play European football next year. And barring a huge goal difference swing, it's going to be Europa League. Brighton and Hove Albion will be a top six club. And I can't quite believe that. Sony, as someone who's found the club relatively recently, how proud does it make you feel to support a club that has not only been through the ringer, because I know you know the history, but how does it make you feel for, like, from someone who lives thousands of miles away to be representing our team?
It feels like an honor. Like every day that I interact with you guys on Twitter and do all the sorts of stuff and, you know, just even being on the podcast or just even talking to people. Like when I was out in the UK, I was talking to so many people and I'm like, thank you so much for letting me like adopt your club. Like I had no idea what was on the other side ever. Like, as I said, when I first started following, I just put out a tweet into the universe and I said, hey, I'm adopting your club. I don't know anything else about it. I hope to learn most of the year. And then lo and behold, everyone's like, oh my gosh, welcome, like join. And so ever since then, I've been embracing the camaraderie, the feeling, and, you know, like I'm supporting you guys over there because some of you guys are actual lifers. Some of us just literally followed within the last year. And so, you know, I want to bring awareness to the US and be like, hey guys, this is what we do. This is our team. And there's a huge fan base on the other side who's also like really excited about this sorts of stuff. So maybe you should follow them. Like I went to work and I basically gave the middle finger to everybody who was making fun of me when I brought in the jersey for the first time. They're like, oh, you're supporting Brighton? That's a weird club. I'm like, no, it's not. It's fun, you know? And so I finally went back and I was like, guess what? We're in the Europa League bitches. Now what? Now what are you going to say? You know, I got respect for that from a lot of people here, which is really great. But no, it's an honor. It's an honor to be part of your club. It's an honor to be part of your family. It's an honor to just be there and, you know, show off the team spirit and whatnot. And hopefully you guys will see a little project coming in the works. Can't really say what it is, but it's going to be a fun one. And I had a lot of fun filming this for a specific group. So yeah, more on that later.
Ooh, exciting. And Sony, it is an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you as well. Now, Dagan, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to ask you the same question. It's again, similar with Sony. It's been an absolute honor and a privilege to have you join us on this journey. And again, I know I've said it before, and again, I apologize if this sounds patronizing, which I think that's exactly what I said before. I said it last time. It still blows my mind that people thousands of miles away, not just people like yourselves and Sony Dagan, people from Australia, people from Canada, people from South America, people in Zimbabwe, people in South Africa, maybe not South Africa, actually, after Percy Tell. But I can't quite fathom the fact that our little club that once played football around a running track. I can't quite fathom why you guys chose us. How does it make you feel to know that your football club, the football club that you've taken to and you've been welcomed into, has achieved something so spectacular?
Well, I said yesterday, the first thing that I thought of was all of you as the win was secured. I messaged several people, Brighton Bard, a couple other podcasters, folks who welcomed me, and the first people who acknowledged me on Twitter and were like, hey, welcome. And the stories I've heard of people, you know, for decades and decades, intergenerational trips to the games, you know, these sort of, I think someone said in the chat, dodgy grounds all over the country. And knowing the fears that even Aaron was carrying, and I think many of you were carrying going into yesterday's game. You know, I've been sort of slapping the believe sign all year, right? We can do this. This is a quality operation. This is what we've been building towards. And I think for me, it felt imminently real the whole time. Like this is where this was supposed to end up. But it's just been an honor to to be a part of the dialogue, about this season. You know, I have more thoughts on what the future looks like, and I don't think this is the pinnacle, not even close. And you alluded to that earlier, Tom, saying you think this is the start of something, and then you retracted because you didn't want to, you know, I think dampen the moment, right? And acknowledging what this is, and it is momentous. And Joe, if I can come back to the point that you were talking about earlier, people debating whether this is the greatest moment. To me, that's the beautiful part of anything that has this much history. This moment cannot exist without the ones that came before it. But I think the people who were a part of creating those moments would tell you that the value of those moments beyond themselves was giving the opportunity for a moment like what happened yesterday. that this club is going to continue moving forward. And I, you know, Shane Duffy wanting to come back and be in the stands for the first Europa League game at home, right, says that, right, on the shoulders of giants, right, you build and you build and you build and you build something great. And, you know, we crave stories of hope and inspiration. It's why this Wrexham thing has taken off and everybody loves it here and around the world. Brighton's story is not dissimilar. In fact, it's, if anything, more profound, more impressive. You know, that story hopefully is going to be told around the globe very soon. And I think there'll be a lot more folks like me who are like, man, I want to get behind that club. So it feels special, right? I feel like I was right in saying, I think this is going to happen, when everyone was telling me, no, you're getting way too ahead of yourself. Nothing matters until Boxing Day. That phrase just rings over and over my head. Sorry to be long-winded. It feels great. I'm going to keep slapping the believe sign well into the future. Love this club. Love everyone I've encountered talking about it. It's just been a delight.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing, Tom, quick. I think the reason why I was so, not negative, that's probably the wrong word, negative, was I think I was more worried about getting hurt if I started to believe. And that's why I think it was so emotional yesterday, because I didn't let myself believe until it was actually done. And then I think it just all hit at once, because I was worried that I don't think I could dealt with being let down again. And, you know, I think that's probably the story of my time on the podcast, really, is if I'm always negative, it's because most of the time it's set up for failure if I'm so positive about it all, and then it just ruins my weekend if I try to think about it, or if I try and be negative and it doesn't happen, then cool, that's a bonus, isn't it, really? You know, it's an added bonus. But if I think positively and we're going to be absolutely fine, you know, next year we'll be in the Champions League, and then we don't happen, then it just sets itself up for disappointment. And I've had that mentality for years watching Brighton, you know, and even through our good times, it was still, you know, you never know what could happen. You know, even prime example was when we got promoted, you know, thinking, yeah, we'll win the league, it's fine, we'll finish top, and then ended up second. And it's like, well, how the hell does this happen? You know, it's just crazy ride.
Aaron,
I
have a question for you, Aaron. Go. Knowing what you know now, what would you say to young Aaron as he was sat in the weekend?
Never really give up believing, because one day it will happen. One day you will be one of the big boys, and the amount of shit and amount of Mickey taking I got at school from even my friends now, you know, you're a Brighton fan, you know nothing, you know, you don't know what success is. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to know what it is. Because every season in the Premier League, every match in the Premier League is a massive victory, no matter what the score. Because I would never thought, sitting at the Wifteen, that I'll be watching the club that I love so much play in the Premier League against the world's best. I would never believe you. I would have said you were crazy. You know, and I think to make it even special yesterday was the fact I was there with the man who I started the journey with. I think that just made it extra special, to be honest. And yeah, it's crazy. It's just this club means the world to me, and to see from where we were to see where we are now, it's nuts.
Well said, Aaron.
Generally nuts.
Well said, and thank you for sharing that, because it's very poignant. Joe, sorry.
Do you have to after that? Go on.
No,
go
Joe,
on.
This is the scenes in the locker room then, Joe. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the locker room scenes and what it means to the fans, what it means to the players. You saw Tony Plume in the locker room acting like a kid at Christmas, and his words, you could feel the pride in his words, and you could hear the pride in Roberto De Zerbi's words. A lot of people stressing about, will Roberto De Zerbi move on? Will he go somewhere else? He's categorically said that he would not miss next season for the world. Joe, the emotions of yesterday will stay with the Brighton players and the Brighton fans for a very long time. But for you, Joe, how have the last sort of 24 hours been?
Oh gosh, I'm going to start. It's been the best time I could possibly think. You know, I go to the football. Sorry. I go to the football with my mum, and she's my best friend. I've experienced every good moment, every bad moment with her in my life, you know, not just football, just in my life. And when that final whistle went yesterday and she hugged me, and I just fucking broke down, you know. And it's just, I can't put it into words. Really, really can't. And for the people that aren't here as well that would have loved it so much, you know, like my dad, he went to the football with his dad, and he passed away 28 years ago, or I think maybe a little bit more than that. In 1993, he passed away. So that was before everything went bad, you know, and how he would have loved that journey. Like my granddad that's still with us, you know, he's so excited about it all. He's been there since the 50s, you know. And this is what it means to reach Europe. Seeing, I turned around and I saw so many people crying. I saw so many people on their knees when Pascal Gross scored. The guy in front of me literally collapsed to his knees and had his arms on the concrete, like just in disbelief that this was our club, that we're going to reach the heavy heights of European football. This is Brighton and Hove Albion in Europe. And, you know, I could talk about it longer, but I'm going to save the tears for when we win the Europa League. But yeah, Tom.
I mean, it's okay. Again, it's okay to cry too. It is A-OK to cry. Like, big hugs to everybody. Like hearing Aaron's and hearing Joe's and hearing everyone else out there. Just like, that makes me emotional, you know, like seeing that's how much passion you guys have. And that's how much history is behind this club. Like, again, hashtag feel the feels. It is A-OK to cry today. If you don't like crying, this is not the podcast for you. You can go to another one.
Especially now, because Tom, you've done all the asking. You've done all the hard graft in this podcast of, you know, directing us through the emotional day. Now, I know how much it meant to you yesterday.
Oh, Joe, you're going to make him cry, Joe.
I know I am. Ooh, and I'm getting him back for asking me. You know, you asked Aaron. And I want to get your thoughts as well, because you've been through it all, mate. You know, I was later to the party than you guys. I've not witnessed nearly as much crap as you guys have. So to get the thoughts from Aaron and yourself, you know, it is special. So I want to get your thoughts.
I mean, first of all, I'd want to put it out that there is no hierarchy. Me and Aaron aren't better. We're not better than anyone else.
Better looking.
But no, me and Aaron are older. So we experienced the lows of the Withdean and the highs of the Withdean. Similar to Aaron, I never thought I'd see it. When I went to my first game with my dad and my granddad, I was like, what the hell is this? what is this? Boxing Day 1999. I was probably too cold to enjoy the game, if I'm being brutally honest. But no, we went back, and we went back again and again and again. I never thought I'd see us in the Premier League, let alone, you know, competing near the top. So there is just, it comes and it hits me in waves. I felt when the final whistle blew yesterday, I was in shock. I was just in utter shock. And then I had a little cry, and then I stopped crying, and I was fine for about 6 hours. Like, I was just like, yeah, man, this is all good. And then, as I say, I went to bed and I was just blubbing. But no, today it's just hit me in waves. But my overall feeling is of pride, of joy. There is a certain sense of middle fingers up to people. Like, as Aaron said, you know, when you were a kid and you'd rock up in your skin shirt, and I've told the story so many times, but, like, you know, the kids would laugh at you. They'd be like, oh, Brian, a crap, we support Man United. This is 99, you know, the treble, you know. So, yeah, but that is a beautiful thing. Me and Aaron have spoken many times about how much we miss the Withdean, and it will always hold a special place in my heart and in, you know. But I'm just so overwhelmed with it all. But, you know, I just, like many others, I just wish there were people here that could see it. That didn't get to my dad's dad. He was at the Goldstone. He took me to my first game with my dad. He never got to see the Amex. He never got to see the heights that we've climbed to. So especially 40 years on from the FA Cup final, which he was at with my dad. It's just, you know, if I could go back and said to my, you know, what would I say to my younger self? My first thing was, I'd be telling my granddad that we did it. We did it. We did the impossible. Something that no one ever thought we'd do. And we've achieved something. And this is just the beginning. And I genuinely believe that. I genuinely believe this is just the beginning of something so special. Because if there is one person that will not let us rest on our laurels, it is Tony Bloom. And it is Roberto De Zerbi. Because they will demand the next step. Dagan put it in the group chat every single year, bar that terrible year under Hupia. Brighton have just gotten better and better and better and better. And at the start of this season, I thought Graham Potter leaving was the single worst thing that's ever happened, like, of the Amex era, worse than Hippier. Obviously not as bad as, like, Goldstone, Gillingham and all that crap, but you know what I mean? I generally thought that was the end. That was it. We were gonna slump into a relegation dogfight, and it was just going to be a torrid season, and I'm so glad I was wrong. So, so glad. We have just up-leveled, and we have exceeded my expectations. I predicted us to finish eighth this season. We're going to finish sixth. We have successfully taken it to some of the richest clubs in the world. And we have done so on, I think, what is the second smallest budget in the league. It is phenomenal what we have achieved. And we have done so without blood money. We have done so without having some oligarch chopping and changing every 5 seconds because a manager doesn't get the results. We have done so without, you know, wasting 50 million on players. We've done it, and we have done something, as I say, that many fans even 10 years ago would have said was impossible. So my feelings, Joe, are of pride, of gratitude, and of just of love. Love for the players, love for the coaching staff, love for Bloom, love for you lot, love for the Brighton fan base, because as much as we moan at them when they're negative on social media, especially, you know, the outpouring of love and of pride and of community has been special, really, really special. And you know how I know we've achieved something special, really special? Because Crystal Palace fans are fucking livid. And I am here for it. I am here for it. I'm sorry for bringing those bastards up. But the fact that they are losing their shit is just, it just makes it even better. So that's me. Apologies for the, you know, the sniffing and the...
And if you've just joined us, Tom was actually crying 5 minutes ago and now he's swearing. So this is the emotions you go through as a football fan.
And let's talk about this comment here. Wasn't that long ago that who we thought was the greatest manager of our history said we'd hit a ceiling. And look at where we are today. And look where we can go in the years to come. Let's share some thoughts from our listeners here. Let's go to Andrew. My first game was at the Goldstone, my dad's new ground man, and how I got my first game to watch. I mean, the Goldstone is a place that is like hallowed ground to many. And it's just so nice that people have watched the club progress over that time. Good old with Dean, the Rocket Man in the rain when we were winning. Oh, Julie, yes. Yes, Julie. Blast from the past. I genuinely wish that the club would just do a one-off random game. Yeah, do you remember?
Oh, my God, yes.
The things I would do, Aaron, for Brighton to play a one-off pre-season game at with Dean. I would do... to get that to happen, and I think it would be mandatory attendance.
Everyone
has a Brighton and Hove Albion football shirt would have to attend.
So good, Dad. Julie, thank you so much. I completely forgot about the Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
I don't think we can see the ceiling anymore. No, you're right, Dan. I don't think we can. I think the ceiling has been obliterated. Curtis.
Yeah, I mean, you've been very
quiet, and yeah. I don't like it.
Here's me thinking I could get away with it.
No, because
but first things first, I need to do something so I can hide away any emotion. I'm more than willing.
No, there is no hiding here, Coach. There is no shame. I mean,
as I've said, I haven't gone through this journey with family. It's been something I've fallen into arse backwards completely. I used to hate football. I'm being completely honest with you. I used to hate it. And then now it's overtaken my life and I've made a family in football now. And it's been one of the most rewarding things of my nearly 31 years on this planet. And hearing all these lovely emotional stories about sharing these beautiful moments, I'm sort of having to live vicariously through this because, as I say, my parents weren't fans, but I know if my mother was, you know, still alive, she would be just so supportive of this journey I've taken, and she would be cheering along with me because no matter what I did, she was just so proud of me. So. Yeah, I'm just immensely happy. I'm just so happy I got to meet you wonderful people and cultivate just this wonderful community that we've thrown together. And just thank you for all sharing these lovely stories with me and being vulnerable, because it's fantastic.
Well, Curtis, I just want to say I'm bloody proud of you, mate. And she is as well.
We've done well, guys. We've done really well. And I don't mean just like, well done, everyone. That's a very good podcast. I mean, like, we've done well, haven't we? As a community, as a fan base, as general people, well done. No, because it has been an emotional 24 hours. It has been an emotional 30, whatever years. For many, it's been very many more. For some, it's been fewer. But there is no gatekeeping on the Albion Obsessed podcast. There is no, you are not the width.
Can I just say, though, Tom... Yeah. Nobody else got the dress code. Me and Dagan are in Europa League colours. So come on, guys.
I've gone for first. I've gone for first with Dean, first Premier League, first Amex.
So, yeah, but also I do want to say thank you so much to Dagan and Sony. You're just wonderful individuals. We love having you here. You're just true bright sparks of this community. There's so much negativity out there, like so much of it, and you are just these beautiful bright lights. And then there's Aaron, of course.
Aaron, mate, I've joined you. Like, you know, you've seen the state of me in the group chat the last 3 weeks.
I don't know what happened on Thursday. Fucking hell, you turned into me all of a sudden. I was there just chilling out, like, no, yeah, it is what it is. Like, yeah, not surprising. Yeah, you were losing your head. It was great. I even messaged Tom, I was like, why is everybody losing their head in the group chat for? Why am I being the only sort of level headed one?
I wasn't there. It was very odd.
Yeah. You and me were both.
But look,
Someone had to take your role.
Yeah, don't worry. Wait till the next podcast after City. I'll come back to my usual self.
let's look ahead then. We've spoken about how, in all likelihood, we are Europa League. I know that some people are still being very sort of, oh, it's not mathematical. And I get that. I get it. But unless Aston Villa score like 5 against us, and Man City score 8, or is it 9, or I can't remember the exact numbers, but we're talking about an insurmountable, what looks like an absolutely insurmountable thing to overachieve. So, pardon me, Man City have got the Champions League final. Yeah. They've got the FA Cup final. I mean, don't get me wrong, their second string 11 is still terrifying. But they beat Chelsea yesterday, what, 1-0? So we could hold out for a draw, maybe.
And they actually struggled there. Chelsea were good.
But you also have to remember is Chelsea also had nothing to play for, and City were basically there for a party and a piss up. So I'd be surprised if they don't start their full strength on Thursday or Wednesday, whenever it is, personally. I think that I would not be surprised if we see the full strength lot who are rested yesterday and play Wednesday. I hope they do, to be honest, because I'm not being funny. I wanted this game from the start of the season because I love watching Man City. I think they're an absolute incredible team to watch. It's the fact that we could, you know, we can go, you know, face to face with them. It is a footballing masterclass on display. Really, two phenomenal managers with two very different teams, and near enough almost identical footballing philosophies, you know. And it is a real shame that it's not a Man City Brighton FA Cup final, because that would have been a hell of a game to watch for a neutral. You know, it's just. It's going to be footballing quality on Wednesday night. And, you know, I can't wait. I'm not too sure what team we'll put out, but who cares? You know, we're just going to enjoy every moment of it.
I think we'll go relatively strong as we can do, bearing with the score we've got, because obviously we don't want to give Villa an incentive to go on an absolutely rampant streak. Because I think, what did they beat Liverpool 8-0 once? Last season or the season before?
Yeah, but that's when, if I'm right, Liverpool didn't have all their youngsters out because they were too busy in the... Was it that year? No, it might be a different year. But, yeah, let's be real. If anything, what's more likely is City putting goals past us than Villa scoring 5, personally.
I don't want to get thumped by City, which will give Villa extra incentive.
Yeah, true.
To go nuts. True. So,
I mean, knowing this year, we'll probably end up beating City anyway. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. We're not surprised in the slightest.
Well, let's just hope that whatever happens on Wednesday, Brighton manage to get through it injury free. I mean, that sounds like quite a low bar to set, but actually I would like to see out the season with as many fit players as possible. And again, we don't want to give Villa any extra incentive. So strong, please, Mr. De Zerbi. And as Jason has said in the comments, which I'm just going to pull up now, Pep won't disrespect us with a weak team. He respects De Zerbi. So yeah, we know that Pep and De Zerbi are good chums. So I think it will be an interesting affair. let's just hope that we are all as buoyant and as optimistic on Wednesday evening and Thursday as we are today. Because at the moment, nothing, it feels like nothing could kill this buzz, harsh this buzz. It is electric and I'm here for it. So thank you so much to Joe, Curtis, Dagan, Sony and Aaron for joining us this evening. Thank you. Just like to echo Curtis as well. Thank you for your vulnerability, because yesterday was a phenomenal, phenomenal moment in our club's history. And we shouldn't pretend like it wasn't. We shouldn't pretend like it didn't mean something. Some people say it's just a game. I don't think those people understand football. So thank you very much. Thank you, viewers and listeners, for joining us on this podcast. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe for more content already. And don't be afraid to drop those comments below as well. How did the final whistle make you feel? How do you feel about Brighton and Hove Albion playing in Europe? And if you feel okay with it, please share your Brighton supporting stories and what this momentous moment means to you. Whenever you may be, wherever you may be, we'll see you next time. Keep it European. Ciao. We're European, baby! Drop the outro, Joe.